This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Come on! Is the weekend over already? How did that happen? I love the weekends, but man, I also love Sunday nights and having a chance to go through everything that happened in the last couple of days in sports. And there was plenty. Plus, it was a special Saturday for me. Saturday at Shinnecock Hills. I got to be there when the U.S. Open was taking hostages. Oh my gosh. It's an experience I will never forget for a lot of reasons. And I know I've tweeted a few pictures. If you missed some pictures, they're up on my Twitter, A-Law Radio. I've shared a few of the nuggets and tidbits I took away from the U.S. Open on Saturday. But in light of what happened on Sunday with Brooks Koepka winning his second consecutive United States Championship, well, some of this stuff is even more fascinating. So I'm excited to be back here in studio. It's our Quicken Loans studio, national mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. It's open. Some things that I think you will find interesting that maybe you didn't know. But the spotlight shines firmly on the first repeat champion since the late 80s. Curtis Strange, who was part of the coverage of this U.S. Open, way, way, way out on Long Island in the Hamptons. I kind of felt cool being in the Hamptons for 12 hours. It's where all the rich and famous people hang out. But you know what I've decided? New York sports fans, New York area sports fans, no matter what the sport or the event, they are obnoxious at times.
You appear to have this major New York bias.
Well, not anymore. No, actually, I had such a good time at Shinnecock Hills, and you guys know me. I talk no matter where I go. And so whether I was following the galleries that were following Phil on his front nine, and that was a crazy experience, or whether I was posted up right on the ropes at the eighth green that on Saturday was a barrage of bogeys and double bogeys for some of the best players in the world. I was talking to golf fans wherever I was. I was taking pictures. I was taking videos. We're going to put together a montage for YouTube at some point early in this work week. Hopefully, Isaac and I will be able to get it done sometime in the next 24 hours for you to see. But I wanted you to be able to experience the U.S. Open as much as possible through my eyes and my lens. I enjoyed being on the course and seeing this tournament from a different perspective and hearing what people had to say. And so watching Brooks Koepka muscle his way through Shinnecock Hills, he has big muscles, but that's not really what I'm referring to. It's more about him embracing the grind. This was a grind. This was not like last year when he finished, 16 under at Erin Hills, I think it was. This was a tournament in which you had to survive in advance. We use that phrase all the time in sports. A lot in March Madness or in postseason baseball or even in football. Survive and advance. Take the best shot this golf course has got. Grind your way through it. And see if you can possibly be the last one standing. And Brooks was perfect for the job. He was tough. When the course got tough, he was tougher. He had a lot of power that he showed off. So the fairways were wider. He was long off the tee, but his approach shots were pin-seeking. He was among the best of the week in reaching greens in regulation, but also getting close to the pin. He made clutch putts, and a lot of that has to do with his confidence. It's kind of funny because if a football player or a baseball player or a basketball player says, I'm the most confident guy in the world, I'm the most confident player out here, it becomes news. When Brooks Koepka says it, It's barely a blip on the radar.
Because I'm the best player in the world.
Right, see? Now, Brooks didn't say he was the best player in the world. He said he was the most confident guy out there at the U.S. Open.
That's what real men do.
He put it out there, and then he backed it up. He put his money where his mouth is. So congratulations to Brooks. Neat twist to his story is that at the end of last year, he tore a tendon in his left wrist and actually had to have a bone marrow transplant on his own self. He had bone marrow taken from, I think, part of his leg, and they used that to strengthen the tendon in his wrist. And I'm glad I didn't have to see pictures of that. Was bad enough to see pictures of Tony Finau's dislocated ankle when that happened at Augusta National. But they did a surgery, and coming into this tournament, well, really coming into the spring, Koepka hadn't played a lot of golf. He wasn't ready for the Masters, and so he did not participate in the Masters. He showed flashes like the PGA Championship. He had a couple of rounds in the 60s. I think he had a couple of rounds of 62, if I'm not mistaken, already this year. So he had shown some flashes of brilliance, but really needed to put it all together. So talk about peaking at the right time. And after he won and was hoisting the U.S. Open trophy for the second time in 2 years, he was asked about being limited and not having enough practice time or as much practice time coming into Shinnecock Hills because of the wrist injury.
I mean, last year at the British, I think I played once from the U.S. Open to the British Open and then came out and I think had a piece of the lead. I don't need to practice every single day. It's the same game I've been playing for 24 years now. I know what I'm doing. I know how to swing the golf club. And it's just a game that I've been playing my entire life. So in 1 week, 1 month isn't going to make a difference.
That confidence is one of the reasons why he does not get too high, does not get too low when the putts aren't dropping, because they didn't all drop for anyone on Saturday. Tony Finau, Daniel Berger, those were the two guys who dropped a couple of putts on Saturday, and you saw what happened on Sunday. But that's the kind of confidence that keeps the guy steady on the golf course. A lot of times you don't know that he's leading the U.S. Open on Sunday because his expression doesn't really change much. He's got a lot of poise. And again, just crafted incredible shots and put himself in position, if not to make birdie, then to have a short putt for par or for bogey. So he started Sunday in a tie for first with three other guys. And this was after the grounds crews at Shinnecock Hills literally emptied the water tanks in the Hamptons of all of their water. They promised... The U.S. Open and the USGA promised that they would have much softer greens to start out on Sunday because of what happened on Saturday when I was there. I'm sure it had nothing to do with me. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Do you care that no golfer finished in red numbers? Actually, no golfer finished even because Brooks bogeyed the final hole to finish plus one for the tournament. And he was the best there was. Tommy Fleetwood finished a shot back by tying the course record on Sunday. By the way, Tommy Fleetwood heard more comments on the course Saturday about his hair. As one younger golf fan said to me, he's got the best flow out here.
That is weird.
No, it was awesome. Every single hole, Tommy Fleetwood was hearing comments about his hair because he's got a beard, a scruffy beard, and he wears a hat like most golfers do, but it's like the Jacob DeGrom got his hair cut. It's like the Noah Syndergaard thing with the locks flowing out of the hat, and he freaking looks like a badass. He's awesome. Anyway, he got more comments about his hair than he did anything else. He posted a -7 on Sunday, which tied the U.S. Open record. Nerd alert. He finished in second place at +2. But does it bother you that there were no golfers in red numbers? I'd love to hear from you on Twitter, A-Law Radio. And were you still paying attention? There was no Tiger Woods. Phil Mickelson took himself out of contention on Saturday. And we will talk about Phil because, like I said, I followed the galleries who were following Phil for the front nine. And you could already tell he was coming unraveled on the front nine on Saturday. And that's what happened to everyone, okay? There were there was a double bogey for Dustin Johnson on the second hole on Saturday, and he was starting to come unraveled. Ricky Fowler was talking to himself. Yes, it was a bit of carnival golf on Saturday. I enjoy the challenging golf. I feel bad for human beings when they're muttering to themselves and they're clearly angry. At the same time, this is what they do for a living, right? So, I mean, they got it. I don't need the golf course to be the same every single time. I like the fact that it's a different challenge. I like the fact that the U.S. Open wants it to be a unique tournament. And I think the USGA accomplished that. But I'd love to hear from you again on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Dustin Johnson, he's the guy who had the four-stroke lead going into Saturday. He lost his feel on the greens. It was weird. It was like it was there and then it wasn't. And it really goes back to the second hole on Saturday where he double bogeyed. I'm not sure how many of you are watching on Saturday. He was in the final group, of course, as one of the leaders. And he missed a par putt, and then walked off the green. He walked off the green. And I was watching, and he was really frustrated. Even then, this was the second hole. And then ended up double bogeying. And before he finished out the front nine, he had double bogeyed again. And a lot of it was about the putting. He does fine off the tee. I mean, this is a guy, you want to talk about muscling the ball down the fairway. He does that for sure. But a lot of it was about the putting, and he just lost the feel and never really got it back. So that four-shot lead disappeared on the front nine on Saturday. And even though he was tied for the lead by the time the third round ended, not that he wasn't in contention, but he just didn't have the same approach. He didn't have the same mental toughness as did Brooks Koepka. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So there's a lot that I want to share with you. Like I said, as I was walking around the course on Saturday, it was Phil Mickelson's birthday. So every 5 minutes there was another rendition, another serenade for Phil on his birthday. And I got to tell you something that became really obvious to me. It is difficult to have any type of humility or humbleness. It's difficult not to have an ego the size of Chicago, where when everywhere you go, all people do is worship you on the golf course.
Oh, yes.
Phil! I mean, it was nonstop, and he was relatively gracious. I mean, it must be mechanical by now. Constantly smiling, thumbs up, tipping his hat. Even when people would yell about his hair or about his gambling, and like I said, New York sports fans, they pride themselves on being creative and can be pretty snarky. He still would keep that smile on his face. And even when he wasn't hitting putts, that was the only time that you would see him kind of break that smile and that grin off his face. And when he double tapped a putt that was still moving on the 13th hole on Saturday, even then he looked like he was having a good time, but I'm not sure I believe him that it was intentional. That's another thing that a lot of people are talking about, still buzzing about with this U.S. Open. So yeah, excited to share some of my experience from Shinnecock Hills, and I want to hear from you as well. Other topics that we will cover on this edition of After Hours: El Tri stuns the world at the World Cup, defeating the defending champs. And man alive, the Mexican, not just the Mexican sports fans, but I think anybody really who's rooting for an underdog or one of the teams that could unseat the powerhouses. Everybody enjoyed that type of a win, that win on Sunday. And there is some talk that maybe the Mexican fans were jumping up and down in Mexico City so hard that they caused tremors on the Richter scale. I don't know if I believe that or not. It might be hashtag fake news. Also, the Astros wrap up a 10-0 road trip. Kawhi Leonard, this goes back to Friday, wants out of San Antonio. I thought they were fixing things. And why I saw a throat slash directed at me on Sunday. So there's a lot to talk about. It's our second week with Chris as the executive producer. And Isaac is here too. The gang's back together yet again to start another work week. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, Facebook page named after the show. Coming up, Phil Mickelson. Does he really lose his mind? Or does he just want you to think so? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Kawhi Leonard is
the best player in the league right now.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Isaac thinks he's funny. I would walk 5,000 miles. That's what it felt like Saturday at the U.S. Open when I was out at Shinnecock Hills. Amazing weather. But can I tell you something really funny about a golf tournament? You can tell the people who either have never been to a golf tournament before or the ones who are going to end up at the end of the day with really sore feet. Because the people who know what they're doing, like the women I'm referring to, are wearing comfortable walking shoes, even if they're wearing sundresses. So I wore a sundress because I knew it was going to be really warm, and I wore sneakers, which was weird. I got to admit, it looked weird, but then I got to Shinnecock Hills, and everybody was doing the same thing, so I felt okay about it. It was really dusty. It was dirty, and by the time I got home on Saturday night late, my legs were dirty. I was like, it looked like I'd been rolling around in the dirt like a pig or something. But it was just, it was such a good day of, you know, essentially walked 11 miles at the course, more than 22,000 steps, and was really sore by the time I got home and got to bed. But I'm so thankful for the opportunity. I was a guest of the USGA, so thank you to the USGA for allowing me to be there. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. And I would love to hear from you on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Phil Mickelson set the world on fire, and I don't just mean the golf world. I mean everybody, all up in arms over the way he handled or mishandled, maybe disrespected, a particular putt on the 13th. Now, there are videos out there. It's easy to find. Fox has the official video, of course, as the owner of the USGA broadcasting rights. Chris, if you want to find a video, there's probably going to be a time or two that I actually refer to as Tom, though. So if I do, just please ignore me. It's not that I don't know that you are not Tom, only that it was 5 years of talking to Tom.
Reflexes.
So when I first got on the air here at CBS Sports Radio, there were, I can think of two occasions where I actually referenced my former network.
I have no memory in my brain.
Thankfully, we have a dump button. Anyway, so Phil Mickelson on the front nine on Saturday has these massive galleries following around. It's his birthday, and everyone's singing happy birthday to him. I took a ton of pictures of the galleries. One of them I did tweet A-Law Radio, and when we get to the bottom of the hour here, I'll put up a few more pictures. And also, I haven't put up any pictures on Facebook, so I'll do that too. It was crazy how many people were following him. He just turned 48. He was not having a good front nine. The putts were not dropping for him. He was visibly frustrated, as was almost every other golfer on the course on Saturday. He was not alone. But by the time he gets to the 13th, he's so upset about putts not dropping that he does something that I've never seen a pro golfer do, certainly not in a major, and never seen a golfer of his caliber go so blatant disregard for the rules. But did he do it on purpose? Or was it a reaction because he was upset? That's the part that people are debating about. So
over the putt.
He stands above the hole with a putt that's downhill. And he takes this putt on 13 and he misses it. And because the greens are so hard and so dry and so fast, the putt is about to skate off of the green, go down the hill, potentially into a bunker, and he's going to have to play it. It's going to end up being just a disaster, right? So instead of allowing the putt to finish rolling, he races around the hole to below the hole and hits the putt back up toward the hole, obviously missing it. He doesn't line it up. He doesn't really look at it. He hits the ball again before it stops rolling because he doesn't want to find out where it lands. Let's be honest. How many of us have actually done that? I've done it when I've been out playing around a golf and I'm really frustrated because I can't get the putts to drop and the ball's about to start picking up speed and like an avalanche cruising downhill back off the green. I've done that before, but I've never done it in a U.S. Open. So Phil Mickelson, like I at the time had stopped following him, but I was standing near this large screen TV talking to some people and we're kind of half paying attention to what's happening. They've got a huge camera on Mickelson everywhere he goes. And we see him start to trot, almost like trot around the hole and hit this moving putt. And we both looked at each other and said, what just happened? Was that a... What was that? But you realize it's him because he's wearing the green shirt, so you know it's actually live golf. It was crazy, the reaction all over the course. People thought he was going to get disqualified. People couldn't figure out whether or not it was a replay. It was really amazing, the buzz that went through Shinnecock Hills as he was on the back nine. Now, he took a ton of time before he came out of the scores. Not really a tent. Before he came out of the scorer's cabin and before he spoke to the media, it was a hurry up and wait. Everybody wanted to hear Mickelson's explanation for why he did not allow that putt to stop moving before he struck it again.
I don't mean disrespect by anybody. I know it's a two-shot penalty, and at that time, I just didn't feel like going back and forth and hitting the same shot over. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on. It's my understanding of the rules. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to do that. I just finally did.
That part I love. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to, again, like we all have. Like I've done it before. At the end of a round where I'm just mad. And he admits it. I laughed when I heard him admit that he'd wanted to do it multiple times during a round and never done it. And here it is, the U.S. Open. I mean, I get it that his round was going off the rails by this time, but think about it. If all you do is shoot, say, 3 or 4 over par, you're still in the mix. If he could just get to Sunday and it was like, forget that. And he got a 10 on the 13th hole, a 10 with the two-shot penalty. But then he had a message for those people who would say that he disrespected golf, that he needed to be disqualified, people who were really upset at the move that Phil made.
If somebody's offended by that, I apologize to them, but... toughen up, because this is this is not meant that way. It's just simply I just wanted to get onto the next hole, and I didn't see that happening at the time.
Can you hear the smile on his face? I think that is awesome. But which is it, Phil? You apologize or you want them to toughen up? Phil Mickelson just told you to toughen up.
Carnival golf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I bet he was having a few of those thoughts, putting into the clown's mouth on Saturday. So that was pretty amazing. One more Phil story, which still it blows my mind that I saw it, but I'm sure that it happens at other courses. It's just I don't want to call it a flaw in the design, but it's just how the course is designed. He was on his front nine. He's coming off of the green at 4, and he's just made a birdie putt, and the fans are all kinds of crazy. It just so happens that the 4th green is right next to the 18th. Maybe it was a par putt, but he made a putt. It just so happens that the 4th green is right next to the 18th tee. So he makes this putt. The massive gallery goes nutso. And then in order to get to the 5th tee, he has to walk right in front of the 18th tee box. Do you know who's standing on the 18th tee box? The very first group. The very first group to tee off at 9:07 a.m. Eastern time is now standing on the 18th tee box as Phil and the scorers and the USGA officials and the TV cameras and his playing partner, who is Casey Johnston, and all of the people who are inside the ropes, it's like a herd of people, have to walk in front of the 18th tee box before those guys can tee off, because that's the path to get to the 5th tee. It was crazy because the fans are nutso, and these two guys who are standing on the 18th tee box they can't do anything. They just have to wait for the entourage to go by. And so they're laughing, they're kind of joking, but they have to wait an extra long time. They can't do anything while Phil and the army is surrounding them on the 18th tee box. And he was like, sorry, sorry. He apologized, raised his hand up in the air and was like, hey man, I'm really sorry. But yeah, that was kind of interesting. I've never seen that happen before. Again, because this kind of stuff you don't see if you're not there, but I'm sure it does happen every now and then. I didn't see a lot of made putts, like good made putts on Saturday because the greens were so difficult. But every now and then when there was a made birdie putt, the roars were awesome. I love that about being at a golf tournament. You can hear the roars from all over the course because it's not that big when you think about area. So I'll go ahead during the break and post a few pictures on Facebook. There are some on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and I'd love to hear from you. Dustin Johnson, like I said, lost the feel. He wasn't the only one. Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler as well, who had a big following. But Brooks Koepka manages to grind it out and muscle his way to a second consecutive U.S. Open win.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Was going to go down into the same spot behind the bunker, wasn't going to have a shot. And I don't know if I would have been able to save a shot or whatnot, but I know it's a two-shot penalty hitting a moving ball. I tried to hit as close to the hole as I could to make the next one. And, you take the two shots, you move on.
If somebody's offended by that, I apologize to them, but, toughen up because this is not meant that way. It's I just wanted to get on to the next hole, and I didn't see that happening at the time.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That is the unmistakable voice of now 48-year-old Phil Mickelson, who I don't think had a happy birthday, at least not while he was at Shinnecock Hills. It was a tough day for him, for Dustin Johnson, for Ricky Fowler, really for every golfer that was out there, except for Tony Finau, Daniel Berger, and then, of course, Brooks Koepka, who managed to stay steady and poised and composed and was okay with grinding it out. And certainly the confidence of having won the U.S. Open a year ago makes a whole bit of difference. When you've done it before, now last year, obviously, he had a minus 16, so it was a completely different course situation, and he had to do the course correction for Shinnecock Hills specifically. But his game is well-suited to the U.S. Open style, and he never gets too high or too low until, of course, he's standing there holding the trophy for the second straight June.
I mean, it hasn't sunk in yet, to be honest with you. I think it's I don't want to say I didn't think I could do it, but I knew that it was going to be that much more difficult. And to finally do it, it's much more gratifying the second time. I can really appreciate how hard it is to win a major and win back to back is special, and my second major is cool. Hopefully there will be a few more.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Jesus is listening in Miami. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Hey there. Oh, so much for that. Ouch, that really pops in my ear, my ears, my headphones. That was kind of like the wind in the late day on Saturday at Shinnecock Hills. Man, it picked up. So I just put a couple of pictures on our Facebook page, and there is one picture where I'm sitting in the grandstand at the 17th. So just off the 17th green, which is a par three, about 180 plus yards, a little over 180 yards. And you can kind of see my hair that's like blowing in the wind. But there is a picture that I put on Twitter on Saturday evening, and I don't know how this happened, but somehow the wind managed to make my hair stick out from my head on both sides, in both directions. It's like, I don't know how that works. Typically, the wind's blowing one direction and the hair is blowing one way. But in the picture on Twitter, A-Law Radio, I've got hair sticking out in all directions on my head. And it actually, in one picture I tried to take, maybe I'll put this one up on Twitter, I was actually holding my hair back on my head because it was like standing straight up in the wind. So the wind really picked up. It got cold pretty quickly. So it was hot, hot, hot. It was in the mid-80s. It was a gorgeous day. Not a cloud in the sky, as you'll see from the pictures on both Facebook and Twitter. And then once the sun went down below the horizon and the wind picked up, which is really what caused so much havoc on the back, well, the front nine for the second half of the golfers on Saturday. Once the wind picked up and the greens got even harder and drier, people really, really struggled. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I want you to look very closely at the picture of Phil Mickelson on the first fairway. First of all, you can see the bazillions of people who are standing around him. I happened to be on the deck at the media center, which was just off the first fairway. And there was a deck, and it was up, you know, up a little higher, maybe up 7 feet or so. And I was above the crowds and was able to take pictures from above everyone else, which was kind of cool on that first fairway. So you get a good aerial look at how deep the gallery is with people on both sides. But the funny part is there is a marshal holding a sign up. I'm not going to tell you what the sign says. I took the picture because it's so ironic. He's holding up a sign telling the gallery what not to do. And then you see all around him that people are not paying any attention. So check that out. It's either on Facebook or on my Twitter. If you go to my actual Twitter page, A Law Radio, you'll see it. I want you to tell me if you can see the sign that the marshal is holding up. So it was a really neat experience. The Phil Mickelson nine holes of following the galleries was nutso. After a while, I got tired of being like smushed into places where, you know, you couldn't move. I'm not claustrophobic, but I get impatient. And so I really don't want to be stuck in the middle of a huge group of people and not have any way to get out. So I followed him for nine holes. And then I decided that I would stand along the eighth green. And this happened to be a really difficult test for the golfers. I saw multiple double bogeys. I saw Mark Leishman do a triple bogey on the eighth. And all of it was about the putting because the pin placement, it reminded me of a roulette wheel. You know how a roulette wheel, the ball is like spinning around the top and then it drops in, right? But it's because of the gravity and the centrifugal force, the way that it spins, that it keeps the ball up for a while until the wheel slows down. Well, the pin placement was on the side of a ridge that reminded me of a roulette wheel. Or if you're big into NASCAR, it reminded me of like Talladega, where it was just this steep ridge. So golfers, because of the way the winds were blowing, kept ending up on the left side, on the other side of the ridge, and would have to putt the ball up or chip the ball up over the ridge. But there's no way to slow it down after that. So then it would come down the other side. Or if they were somehow managed to get a ball to stop on the side of the ridge where they weren't putting up or down, but they were trying to putt along this angle, the ball would just shoot past the hole and then shoot past the hole again and then shoot past the hole again. It was really difficult to get the ball to stop or to drop because of where the pin placement was. And so I stood there for about an hour. And I made a lot of new friends. There was everyone from an older couple who clearly knew golf really well to a lot of young people. There were kids that were standing there, and there was a group of guys one of them was wearing a UConn Husky shirt, and he said he lived in Boston. Ooh, said he was going to listen to the show this first hour to hear me talk about the U.S. Open. So there were a lot of young people, young adults, college students. There were international golf fans that were there with a bunch of different accents. And so I stood at this eighth hole, and I watched everyone come through. Jim Furyk, Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, Zach Johnson, eventually Dustin Johnson, who was in that last group. And so many of them struggled with this pin placement that I think the entire time we were there, we saw one guy drop a putt. I mean, we watched the last eight groups come through and one guy maybe dropped a putt. Yeah, there wasn't much of that. I mean, you mostly had guys muttering to themselves. Ricky Fowler ended up in the fescue grass to the right of the hole, which is where I was along the ropes. And he, like, people had to move. He actually hit a guy with his ball, his approach shot. And people had to move so that he could swing and try to get the ball out of the fescue. Another guy was down at the, like, kind of at the bottom, just below the green, the bottom of the fairway, just below the green, tried to chip up and the ball rolled back down. He tried to chip up and the ball rolled back down. It was just a really difficult hole, but it was very enlightening to be right there because you got to hear these guys talk to their caddies and try to figure out what to do, but you could also see their frustration.
Carnival golf.
Yeah, as they were struggling with the clown's mouth that was there on the eighth green. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. You know what else I really thought was fun to observe was how much Tony Finau has become a cult hero in golf. You remember him, right? I mentioned him earlier in the hour. He's the guy who was celebrating a hole-in-one on the par 3 competition the day before the Masters started. his first ever Masters. He'd never golfed in the Masters before. He finally qualifies. He's in. And he gets a hole-in-one. Maybe he's thinking, like, yeah, this is it. I'm going to do this thing. And he celebrates, and he dislocates his ankle. When he is running from the green back to the tee box, he dislocates his ankle so badly that he crumples into a heap in the middle of the fairway. And it's obvious that his ankle is turned in a way that it's not supposed to. And he pops it back into place. And still at the U.S. Open, and he was actually in the final group on Saturday. On Sunday. He had a really big day on Saturday. I think he was minus four. And because he did that and so many other guys were going the other direction, he ended up in the final group on Sunday. So there were so many people who were cheering for him that now know his name because of what happened at the Masters. And I even heard comments like this. Oh, he's a man's man. I mean, I guess if you pop your ankle back into place without even a grimace, and then you get up and you walk back to the tee box, you are a man's man. So that was also interesting. let's see what else. There were so many tents and concession stands and golf carts that at some point it just became ridiculous to try to use a golf cart because there were so many people out there. But the way that they would allow you to cross holes after guys had teed off was kind of fun too, because it was like herding cattle, right? So they, on particular holes, they would open up the ropes and allow you to walk or run across to get to the other side. Obviously, when you got that many people, it's really difficult to walk all the way around the hole. But you had to wait until golfers would tee off and then walk past that walkway so they were clear of you. Anyway, as you can imagine, any time that there are thousands of people in one space, there are marshals who would tell you when to go. Okay, you can go, you know, you hurry. But it's like crossing the Red Sea with a thousand people. It's impossible to get everybody across quickly. And there'd be like older people walking really slowly. And the marshals are trying to hurry them up. And the guys are waiting to tee or to, you know, to hit their next shots. And just a lot of people, a mass of people. Very vocal, of course. But also a good... kind of like that, yes. A good mix of older golf fans and young kids and men and women. There were lots of different ethnicities that I could see out there in the galleries. I think golf is alive and well. The fact that there were so many young people who were attending the U.S. Open and really getting into it and, you know, shouting Roll Tide for a guy who played at Alabama or for a guy who played at another SEC school. I mean, it was a lot of fun to be out there. So check out the pictures on Twitter and on Facebook. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.